All right, fine. I'll talk about the Baker Mayfield stuff, but you're probably going to be disappointed. Welcome to the Locked On Vikings podcast.
You are Locked On Vikings, your daily Minnesota Vikings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome, welcome, welcome to another episode of the Locked On Vikings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. As always, I am your host, your pal, and the kid you copied off in math class. My name is Luke Braun. You can find me on Twitter at Luke Braun NFL. You can find the show on Twitter at Locked On Vikings. Thank you so much for making Locked On Vikings your first listen of the day. Today's episode is brought to you by Blue Nile. Make your moment sparkle with jewelry from BlueNile.com, and Locked On Vikings listeners get $50 off of purchases of $500 or more. This podcast exclusive includes engagement, so use code Locked On at checkout. Today on the show, I tricked you. All right, I baited you, I clickbaited you. We will talk about the Baker Mayfield thing. I'll go into all the ins and outs of it, but it's going to be a pretty short story. So for the rest of the show, I want to talk to you about Carl Eller, too, and specifically stuff we can learn from Carl Eller, and also just an appreciation of that dude, because, you know, damn. But first, I'll give you what I promised, all right? You did it. There was a Twitter Tuesday question about this, and I felt like I didn't, like, I was like, I don't know, it sounds like a guy just said it, and I kind of wanted to give you a more thorough picture. So, here's the deal. You may have seen floating around on various, like, clickbait outlets like this one, that there's Baker Mayfield to the Vikings rumors swirling. They're not, all right? So, there isn't. So, here's what happened. Dan Graziano, an ESPN guy, has a column at ESPN Insider, and in it, he decided he would ask around some league people, executives and front office people, and maybe even coaches, ask him some fun questions, and that was his Insider column. And one of those fun questions was, hey, where are some, like, outside-the-box landing spots for Baker Mayfield? You know, we all know, like, maybe he goes to Seattle, or maybe he goes to Carolina, like, those teams are... But what about one that, like, nobody's thinking of? And one of those people said, I don't know, Vikings? Like, that's it. Then he was like, yeah, I don't know, Lions, Saints, Vikings? Like, he was just kind of throwing some names out there, and the Vikings were on the list, and so everybody gets a piece out of it. And I'm going to get my piece of the pie, too, all right? So that's literally it. So that is not a report. That is not that there has been any call. There is no movement or even correspondence. There is no indication that the Vikings are even remotely interested in Baker Mayfield. Let's still talk about, like, what it would look like, just because, it's June and that's kind of fun, but know that, no, this ain't happening, all right? This ain't even close to anything. But I think what happens is people say, oh, well, that was like a front office executive. They're kind of in the know. Well, they wouldn't say the Vikings if there weren't something, you know, there's truth to all rumors. I am growing to hate that quote so much. It's like, no, there aren't. There's not truth to this one. I'm sorry, it's wrong now. But, you know, somebody walks up to you and says, hey, Baker Mayfield landing spots, and you can't say the obvious ones. They go, I don't know, Lions, Vikings, who cares? And that's now the article, and now that's a whole thing, and everybody's got their publication. Like, that's literally it. So when I'm navigating these kinds of situations, I do like to go to, like, exactly what the source and who was saying what and what precisely did they say. This is not somebody at ESPN saying, hey, the Browns have called the Vikings about Baker Mayfield and the topic has been broached. Like, that might be something actually newsworthy, even though that's a very early step. There might be something to that. Not this. Nope. But hey, screw it. Let's talk about it anyways. What would it be like? What would happen? How would Baker Mayfield happen, right? So this is a weird... So we talked about this a little bit on Locked On NFL on Tuesday with Ross, because... Ross Jackson, my co-host there, and he also does Locked On Saints, so we kind of both were like, what's the deal here? It makes a little more sense with the Saints, who are, like, willfully strolling into a season with Jameis Winston, and I don't know if that's necessarily the best thing for them, or, I don't know, Taysom Hill or something still, because they can't quit him. I have no idea what's going on with the Saints, so getting, like, an established guy in, there's clearly a spot for him. You know, if he comes in and he starts and he takes over, it's not that awkward for the Saints. For the Vikings, it's, like, really awkward. If you traded for Baker Mayfield, his contract is gigantor, but it's very malleable. So he has $18.5 million all in base salary, and not a dime of it's guaranteed. So theoretically, the Browns could cut Baker Mayfield and they wouldn't be out anything. But I mean, he's a number one overall pick from 4 years ago. They want to get more for him than that. So that's why they're so like reticent to cut him. It just makes a trade really hard, right? How are you supposed to take on $18 million? Now, I talked yesterday about how like, look, you want to sign Ndamukong Suh. The space is pretty much there. And if it isn't quite there and you need to make like a tiny bit more, that's not a big burden. This would be a big burden. They would probably have to give up a lot to make an $18.5 million cap hit fit. The thing is, none of that is guaranteed. And so if Baker Mayfield does want to play in 2022, which, by the way, he probably will just be the starting quarterback of the Browns, because the rumor out of the like league sources and league offices is that the league is pursuing a lengthy suspension for Deshaun Watson. It might knock him out for the whole year, and like, okay, Baker Mayfield will play out the rest of his rookie contract and go. And that seems to be where things are headed in Cleveland. But if he was traded to Minnesota, you could kind of say like, hey, we're not going to do this unless you take a gigantic pay cut. And that becomes part of the negotiation. And you might be able to shave quite a bit off of that if Baker Mayfield really wants out of Cleveland, which like, yeah, dude, I'd get it. That would make sense. That would be fair. So... That's like part of it. And then, you know, Baker Mayfield almost certainly wouldn't start over Kirk Cousins. He would just sort of be a backup plan and sort of an heir apparent. And he would just kind of like sit there and you'd work out a more like real contract with him. And then he would be the quarterback that takes over after Kirk Cousins. So there's a bunch of problems that I have with this. The money is the first one. The second one, like, it just is not a very wise use of resources, right? You could make it work if you really had to, but like, come on, man, why would you do that? The second problem that I really have with this is I don't think you're getting better necessarily at the quarterback position. Baker Mayfield's a weird case because he was hurt for the last 2 years, and like, that's going to affect your play. Like, that's going to make it so you're like, that affected him. And so what we remember over the last 2 years is Baker Mayfield being like, man, not very good. But his shoulder was hurt that whole time. And that affected things and affects the way you process. And it affects like if you can't throw with as much zip because of your shoulder, now you have to read things differently and it throws your whole rhythm out of whack and you start making other bad decisions. And it's like an all kind of stem. So I do think that there's a world where like Baker Mayfield ends up starting quarterback of the Seattle Seahawks and regains, you know, his 2019, 2020 form where he was actually like pretty good. I think that can totally happen. And so if he did come, if he did in this weird fantasy land come to the Vikings, like that's kind of what we'd be hoping for. But boy, that's a lot of ifs and maybes and conditionals to get a quarterback who like, are we sure that dude's better than Kirk Cousins? Because like most people put those two guys in the same tier. What are we doing here, right? If you want to move on from Kirk Cousins, I want to move on from Kirk Cousins, but I'm not going to do it for a guy who's the same tier of like, this guy's probably like not good. Like this guy can maybe be a starter, but he's not good enough, you know? That's where Kirk Cousins, you know, the middlest of middle 59-59 and two, the whole meme of everything is kind of exactly where Baker Mayfield is. I think I would take Kirk over Baker, but that's mostly like if Baker could regain his form from a couple years ago, I probably would overturn that because I like Baker's scramble ability and the kind of gamerness he has. I like the field awareness that he has. And I think even though he's far less talented physically than Kirk Cousins, I think that sort of intangible it factor kind of gene thing is the difference maker for me. But I do not hold that opinion very strongly. And I think they're pretty much, and it's like, we're going through a lot just to sort of spin our wheels. That's the real problem I would have with the Baker Mayfield thing. And I think most of you agree. If we want to move on from Kirk Cousins, let's shoot for the moon a little bit, you know, let's go see if we can't pry Lamar Jackson, who's in a contract dispute with the Ravens, you know, like let's get weird and get something a little more exciting in here, you know, go get some rookie that we can all get excited about. That's where we're at on the Baker Mayfield thing. It's a stupid June talker, whatever. This is something that wouldn't even see the light of day if I had seen it in literally any other month of the year, even July. So let's move it in the past. All right. Baker Mayfield's not coming to Minnesota. He's probably going to either quarterback the Browns or quarterback the Seahawks, maybe the Panthers, or maybe do something weird like the Texans, or he ends up in like Pittsburgh or something wild. But let's just let that one die. Yeah. All right. Sounds good. For the rest of the show, I want to talk to you about somebody who actually matters. And that's Carl Eller. Carl Eller is a lot of things. He is a very complex human. And there's a lot to talk about with him beyond just like reading off sack stats and stuff. I don't know. I just want to talk a little bit about Carl Eller. Can you indulge me that? All right. Do I have your gosh darn permission to talk about Carl Eller? Let's do it. But first, let me talk to you about your car. Oh, Eller, I'm so sorry. That was unforgivable. I'm so sorry. If you have parts that you need for your car, go to rockauto.com. Look, we all need repairs on our car sometimes, and the mechanics are probably upcharging the crap out of us for the same parts that you could get on Rock Auto. Same manufacturer, like same factory, same box and everything. Just have it shipped to your door instead of to the mechanics, where then they can charge you 30, 50, even 100% more for the exact same stuff. Just bring it to the mechanic and say, hey, I have this part and I need you to do it. Can I just pay you for the labor? You can save a buck that way. Just go to rockauto.com. Whatever you get at Rock Auto, whether it's that or safety supplies like a tire kit or jumper cables or anything, even like motor oil, whatever you need, go to rockauto.com. And whatever you get there, make sure you let them know in the How You Heard About Us section that Locked On sent you. Because if you don't, the rabbits will keep writing segue puns, and nobody wants that. Rock Auto, amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. I apologize again. Hey, NBA draft night's coming up. Who will the Timberwolves pick, or whoever your favorite basketball team is? Go find your local show. Whether it's Locked On Timberwolves or Locked On Nuggets or Suns or whatever you like, Locked On, whatever. NBA's got a show for all of them, so go check that out. They're all going to be doing a bunch of their own live stuff and coverage and all sorts of stuff. It's draft night. They're going to be having a lot of fun. Make sure you check that out. Let me talk to you about Carl Eller, one of the Purple People leaders. I'm hoping I can do a nice little profile on all of them, including the lesser members, like, you know, Paul Dixon was there at the very beginning. Or, you know, of course, Gary Larson and all that. But let me talk about Carl Eller, who played for most of the time, all of them played, right? Like, I mean, they all played well into the late 70s, and Eller was another one of those people that, like, never missed a game and was always there and was always elite and just, like, played for 900 years. And, like, gosh, when you look at those Vikings and you look, like, the Vikings were basically, outside of a few pieces here and there that really sprung them loose, by the time Bud Grant got there, or I guess like 67 and 68 was a lot of guys came then. That's when they got like Kraus and a few draft, like that's when Page came. So call it 68 all the way through. Like some of those guys were there to like 1982 and they played in the Metrodome. Like these guys were forever. And Carl Eller was one of them. He played his entire career as a Viking and his entire college career as a Gopher. He grew up in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, in the 50s. This was full-on segregated South, and he was a young black kid. You know, this was like that experience. And he lost his father at 13. So he was kind of one of those kids that had to be an adult kind of before you're ready to be an adult. And he was very like, it turned him into this like nose down hard worker, just got to like support the family kind of kid. He had to take on a lot of responsibilities really before you wish a kid did. And that's what happens when you lose a father. Right. But he lived with his mother and his grandmother up until that time. And then he played in high school, but he played in segregated schools in the South. These were not the greatest facilities, and therefore those programs weren't exactly the most fleshed out things. It wasn't really until he got to college that he played like true pro competition and really got to kind of cut his teeth. But a big part of that was Murray Wormath, who was the head coach of the Gophers at the time and you know, had his whole recruiting thing. And he wasn't quite as big on it as the guy, like Duffy Doherty at Michigan State is the guy that I think gets most of the credit for this. But Murray Wormath was also kind of doing this where he was sort of slowly but surely following in Doherty's footsteps and going, oh, wow, you can find like really good athletes if you go find all the segregated black schools in the South where, you know, those guys aren't allowed to go to Duke. So like, we'll take them. And that was kind of how you found Carl Eller. I mean, guys had to like triple team Carl Eller. If you watched him in high school, I could not find any high school tape. I would just share it if I could. But from the accounts that people say, people were like, this dude's insane. Like, he was unbelievably dominant. And I have to think around the 50s and 60s, there was a lot of kids around those southern states, especially the coastal southern states, you know, the Carolinas and stuff, where, like, the kids were clearly NFL caliber athletes, and I wonder if just nobody gave them a second look because they were in a black school. I have to think that some of this, that stuff happens now with like historically black universities and stuff. Like I wonder how many total superstars just like never make it and, you know, end up selling insurance or something. Didn't happen to Carl Eller. He goes to the University of Minnesota and he's dominant there as well. He's one of only a couple of black kids on, the Rose Bowl winning team of, I want to say that was 61. But over time, he grows and blossoms into a total first round pick superstar. And that's when he ends up being on the Vikings. I'm not going to talk too much today about his actual Viking career. It's covered pretty well. You can go look at what you want, but I mean, he was just mean on the field and, you know, off the field, he was like this quiet hard worker guy, but there was a lot more to him. But I mean, he was just this, like the guy that like, emerges out of the shadows when the hero has to fight, you know, a mountain man that's 6'6" and the bad guy goes away and says like, Igor, take it. Like that was Carl Eller. I think of him as the muscle, right? You know, the purple people leaders, you've got like Alan Page is the brains and Carl Eller is the muscle and Jim Marshall is the, you know, wisecracking, clever ringleader, you know, the Brad Pitt in Ocean's 11 type. And then, you know, you've got all these other role players that kind of came in and out over the 800 years that all three of those guys played with each other. But, I want to keep talking about Carl Eller and who he really was beyond just a guy that got a lot of sacks, and boy, he got a lot of sacks, and he was relentless and he was quick off the ball and he was good and he was smart. He knew what he was looking at. And there's so many, I mean, he was just everything that you could ever want an edge rusher. And he squared off against like Ron Yeary in practice all the time, who was everything you could ever want in a tackle. And of course, you know, these are the two Hall of Fame guys. Like that's iron sharpening iron. Let me tell you, like, I think about that all the time. It's like these two guys with just like no flaws in their game practicing against each other. What happened? Like, did they like shatter earth a lot? Did you have to like till the land after every practice because they kept making like anime style cracks in the ground? I don't know. I'm getting away from myself. But we'll keep talking about this. But first, let me talk to you about Built Bar. Built Bar has a new flavor coming out. The scientists cannot be stopped at Built Bar. They did not ask if they should. They simply asked if they could. And they came out with Coconut Brownie Chunk. Coconut Brownie Chunk has been around before. Coconut Brownie Chunk is a little bit of a thing. I am not a coconut guy. But, however, Coconut Brownie Chunk is insane. And I don't even like coconut. You have to get Coconut Brownie Chunk. It is absolutely delicious, covered in 100% chocolate, and then, you know, flakes of coconut inside. It is so good. Coconut filling and, like, bits of chocolate, like brownie, kind of. It's unbelievably good. They're only here for a limited time. They're made with collagen protein, and they are absolutely delicious. So go to built.com, use promo code LOCKED15, get 15% off of your order. That's promo code LOCKED15, all one word. Go get Coconut Brownie Chunk Built Bars right now before they are out. I'm going to buy all the rest of them like tomorrow, so get them in now. A few weeks ago, I was doing research for the Norm Van Brocklin episode that I did, which you can still go listen to. And I was watching the profile that John Boyce and Alex Rubenstein did over at Secret Base as part of their History of the Atlanta Falcons documentary. And they have a whole thing about Norm's time there and all that. And their kind of send-off ends with this phrase that I can't get out of my head. And it's that nobody's ever any one person. And they were talking about how Van Brocklin, you know, his persona to the media was this, like, brash, you know, boisterous. He was always challenging people to fights and yelling at people and all that stuff, but he was also a family man, and, you know, he also got super melty around kids, and you know, he was a very like devout husband and like all these other things that probably were more important to the world than like what sports writers thought of him, right? But that's how people come across. But that phrase stuck, you know, nobody's ever any one person. And if that applies to anybody, it's Carl Eller. Carl Eller is not any one person. He is not just the guy who got a bunch of sacks on the Vikings. He wasn't just a member of the Purple People Eaters. He was a lot of things, some of them a little darker than others, right? When he was later in his career, Eller had a problem, addicted to cocaine. He struggled with that, and it got him in trouble, and it kind of became his struggle post-retirement, especially once football was no longer there, that sort of became the fight. And he got in trouble with the law sometimes. But he spent a lot of the 80s once he had found a way to get sober. And part of his sobriety was, I think, paying it forward, you know? And he spent a lot of the 80s, like cocaine in the 80s was a problem. I don't know if you knew that. But cocaine in the 80s was a very big problem. And Carl Eller did a lot of direct and personal outreach for it, you know, like helping people face to face with that. And I mean, you know, who better, right? A role model of the state, total legend of folklore, a gopher, a Viking, and somebody who's like, hey, look, I'm a superhero and I had this problem too. It's not you. It's just a demon we have to deal with, and let's deal with it together. That's just, it's like a powerful thing. And hit that work continues indefinitely. And I think that's a very cool thing. The other thing about Carl Eller, total thespian. He likes to act. I think that's just such a funny thing. Like, he's so like the teddy bear, big, like scary guy, but with like a heart of gold and a soft interior kind of guy that is like a trope in every like heist movie. I don't know why I always think of the Purple People Eaters as a heist movie, but I do envision them like stealing diamonds. But I always think of like Carl Eller as like the scary muscle, and he'll beat you up, but you know, he's just like all love really when you get to know him. And nothing plays into that better than his weird side love of acting. He wanted to do some commercials and stuff. There's a great video out there that you can find. I think I posted it on my Twitter some time ago. You could probably find it if you just search my Twitter for Carl Eller, of him like trying to get stage direction from a director in some, I don't know if it's like a short or a commercial or something like that, but he's like arguing with the director, and it's like this clearly frustrating set scene, which I've in my life seen plenty of times. Like, I know that look, but it's like so funny. It's just the like meanest possible dude being like, well, but if I turn this way, is that really get the audience to, it's like, so he in his sheer size, he looks so out of place in this dinky little set. Like, the dude looks so much like a terrifying edge rusher, even though, like, you know, the guys back then, 60s and 70s, were, I mean, they would all get their asses kicked today. They were all small and, you know, probably would be discarded as undersized, and they wouldn't be able to get off a block against, you know, the big 300-pound tackles that we see that are all, you know, 6'8", Bryant McKinney, you know, mountain men. But even that, like, doesn't really apply to like Eller and to a degree Marshall, who are just huge men. So look, if you want to boil Carl Eller down to just, you know, the guy who got into an altercation with the cops and pulled a taser out of his side, which, by the way, Jesus, I didn't know people were capable of that. But I mean, if you want to think of him as that guy, or think of him as the guy that, you know, had a bunch of sacks, but, you know, had demons also or whatever, you go for it. But for me, I prefer to think of him as a teammate, an enforcer, as somebody who accomplished a lot and somebody who had talent so undeniable that he was able to bash through like a 500-year-old barrier and find his way into Big Ten football in the early 60s. And that was one of the first things he accomplished. I prefer that version of Carl Eller, somebody who did a lot of impressive things and then after football found a way to have even more impact. In a way, he has quite a bit in common with Alan Page, even though there's this sort of brains and brawn thing that you get when you compare the two. But, you know, Alan Page, I mean, the true Renaissance man, right? With all these things, we'll talk about him a lot someday soon. But for Eller, his story is one that shows me, at least, that nobody's ever any one person, and that you don't have to be any one person, you know? That if you're doing something and it's all you've done for your whole life, shoot, you can also maybe act or do what you want or be something different. A lot of people do that throughout their lives, and Carl Eller, well, he's got a lot more in common with the rest of us than we often think of when it comes to football players. But look, tomorrow, I don't know, we'll talk about something else. Maybe something modern, maybe not. I don't really know. Maybe we'll do the Ellen Page thing. We'll talk about something. July is coming up, and that's all. July is going to be a very cool month. Some people know what I'm talking about. Most of you don't. July is going to be very cool. Get hyped for it, all right? July is going to be a very fun month. We're going to kick off some very cool things that I'm very excited to share with you. I'll talk to you all tomorrow, and as always, Skull.